you, Lucky Devils. Guess who it is again? I don't know if it's me. It could be me. I think I'm me, but I'm not positive I'm me. But there is evidence to the contrary. But Fish and Frank in the chair, Robert in the chair across me, and our producer, RJ, up there in the booth, trying to make sense of all this. We've got, of course, our top five of the week and all that other stuff and where everything's going on. But, you know, I'm sitting there before the show, and I'm standing around the store, and I'm talking to Lil. She's amazing. And she just got back into town. One of her snowbird friends kind of comes and goes and all that. But we were talking about going out, and she wants a tour of the river. And, you know, I don't do charters anymore, but there is a chance I could be hit. I mean, I have a price. And the price was a bag of fresh cheese curds from Wisconsin that she brought down. I mean, they squeak at everything.
Oh,
actually, I had a customer I gave one to. He'd never had a real – he didn't even know what a cheese curd was. And where I grew up, I was about 2-3 miles from the – you know, we'd ride our bikes up there in the summer without – you know, when there's no school, you get there at 2 o'clock. And they just drained the whey off, and the guy would be walking around with a big stainless steel pail of salt, throwing it on there. So you get the ones with salt or with all salt. They'd allow us to go in and just pick cheese curds out of the big bins and eat cheese curds while we were there. So for me, it's a very nostalgic thing as anything else. I mean, I don't think many people got to grow up near a cheese factory.
Yeah, I've never seen the factory, but I tell you, if you've never had a cheese curd, there's no way to describe it to you.
But it's got to be, they still got to squeak.
Yes.
If they're not squeaking, they're not, like, it's not a cheese curd, it's cheese.
Yeah.
They squeak when you bite them. They're awesome. But anyways, talking to Lil, I was standing there, and I'm like, for some reason or another, we were right by the jigs in the store. And I'm taking these jigs off the wall, and I put them in a basket, and I'm like, nah, put them back up. What am I going to talk about with jigs? I have no idea. And I did that, like, twice, but I knew I wanted to have them for some reason. And then I had this bag of stuff in the truck. Robert and I were talking about on the way up to the show here. And so we've got some, I think, pretty cool stuff coming up in the show for you about that. But it's just weird how an inspiration will hit you. I'm talking to a woman about thanking her for the cheese curds. I'm going to take her and her friends up on the river. I used to do river tours up there. And it's about 15, 18 miles. We go up the river and come back in the round trip. And I never go on the same water twice. There's so many creeks and small things up there. If you know where you're going, I can go up the main body of the river, and I can do it 2 or 3 different routes, where we come all the way back down and never are on the same piece of river. You never see the same body of water. So it's actually pretty cool. The Peace River is awesome. There's so many islands and creeks and cuts and all that. It's just, it's beautiful. And you're going from the mangrove habitat, the saltwater habitat, then you go into the sawgrass where it's the estuary changing, and into the cedar and hardwoods of the freshwater area. And that's all within just a few miles. And it's absolutely amazing to see. And you can understand some of the older trees are still there. Charlie knocked down a lot, and Irma didn't help. But Johnny Weissmuller, the old Tarzan movies, were filmed on the Peace River and Myakka River. And you can see why. You get up on the river, you can see that Africa look to it. There's places up there that looks like you're on the plains. It's absolutely awesome. Anyway, let's start off with today. Robert, number one is place is offshore, right?
Yeah, it's not even just a species, it's just offshore. This whole next week is supposed to be hot and mild wind. I mean, it's just going to be perfect for offshore fishing. For this time of year, we don't get very many opportunities like this.
And here's the key. You look for the glass minnows, the thread fins, the schooling bait, all these little bait fish, because that's what everything is looking for. And while we are starting to see a little bit of that in the harbor, and I'm telling you right now, I'm going to put it on the line right here. This coming week, things are going to really start kicking off. If the weather holds for 2 weeks, we're going to see some of the best fishing we've seen in a couple of years. All the pointers are there. I know that what the baits come in. I know where it is. I know what should be following it. All the indicators are this is going to get spectacular here in the next week or two. Offshore, what types of fish are you calling for offshore, Robert?
Well, realistically, you're just kind of...
Realistically? What? You all right? You got a crank here? I can rev you up a little bit? What the heck's going on here?
Just that frog in my throat still.
That wasn't a frog. That was like a turtle. What's all going right. on? You okay?
Yeah.
You all right?
Yeah, I'm getting there.
A little worn out?
I'm glad we got a straight. I'm glad we got a straight man in the group.
Wow, that one cut three ways, long, deep, and hard.
Oh yeah. Wow. Okay, so what fish are on the Gulf?
I don't know.
All right, I got the list here. We got snappers, we got grunts, we got sheephead, we got grouper. There is a few cobia. There's triple tail. There's I don't know something here. It's written. I don't know. It's something else. But there's fish. A lot of fish out there.
Yeah, your better fishing is going to be in that 3 to 12 miles.
You're back.
Mark. Yeah.
You're okay?
Yep, I got my composure back. I'm good. Okay.
Get him, Robert. Get him.
That 3 to 12 mile mark is by far the key thing. And you don't need your big heavy tackle. Your inshore snook redfish tackle that we normally use is perfect for out there because you're more or less grocery shopping. You know, most of the fish are going to be in that 1 to 10 pound range. I've actually heard of a couple sheephead out there that were pushing 10 pounds.
Yeah, there's been some good ones. And the nice part about it is if within 3 to 10 miles of the shore, there's plenty of fish.
Yeah, and the key thing is, yes, there's going to be a lot of people out there, you know, but there's a lot of reefs out there. There's a lot of hard bottom. Either get out there early, plan on staying out late, or just going to have to put up with some of the people that are out there, unfortunately.
Yeah.
I mean, it's beautiful weather and a lot of food.
Snappers, grunts, sheephead, I would say mostly the same bait. I'm going to call for a live shrimp, but before I put the shrimp on, what I'm going to do is I'm going to put a piece of squid on the hook. I'm going to take a squid, lay it down, and cut myself some half-inch by 2-inch strips, and I'm going to put that on a 2-aught circle hook, because you have to use circle hooks. It's the Gulf of Mexico. And then I'm going to put the live shrimp right in front of that. And I'm going to hook it through the head or the tail, whichever way makes you feel most comfortable. You don't have to, you know, do anxiety over this, which where do I want to put the hook? Just get the hook in the shrimp. Because you're planning on getting the shrimp robbed anyway.
Right.
All right? You're going to put it down a couple ounces of weight, 2-foot leader, 2-aught circle hook, I'd say 25, 30-pound test leader.
Yeah, I'm more comfortable with 30, but either one is good.
If you get into the 40, 50-pound leader, where you're going to not get quite as many bites. You want to drop it down a little bit, get a few more fish in the line. But the object is they're going to really want that shrimp. That's one of the key baits out there because shrimp don't live inside. Shrimp live out in the Gulf of Mexico. They grow up in the harbor, the canals, even a lot of the creeks and stuff. Pretty much every canal in Englewood, the saltwater canals in Northport, Port Charlotte, Punta Gorda, Cape Coral, they've all got shrimp in them, believe it or not. There's a lot of shrimp in these canals. So it's, and they're all migrating towards the Gulf as they get bigger. So out in the Gulf, it's a prime bait. They're going to grab that and probably take the shrimp. If as soon as you feel the fish, you start reeling. If you don't feel anything, stop, drop your rod tip, let that bait go back. That squid is still on there. They're going to come and nail that squid, and you got them.
Yeah, that squid's very, very difficult for them to get off, so it's that added attractant and added lure, basically.
Yeah, it's my backup plan. You know, I'm going out there, I want the groceries, this is not a catch-and-release venture, this is, I'm hungry, I want a good meal.
And all those are fine eating. I personally would, I mean, you and your father turned me on to grunts years ago, and I'll take that. Honestly, a lot more over grouper, especially red grouper, to be honest.
A big red grouper, a big gag grouper. I like the big ones. I'm not thrilled with the little ones. If he's well oversized, I like that firmer texture.
Okay.
You know, and so I like the big gags. I mean, we're talking around 30 inches or so or better.
But gags are closed, so you're talking about red grouper.
Red grouper, any of the grouper, 30 inches or over. I prefer them. Like, I don't really care for the taste of the smaller snook. To me, snook gets its prime when it's about 38, 40 inches. That's when the meat really starts tasting good. And anybody who says little snook tastes better than big snook, just because they were never caught big snook back when it was legal. You're not allowed to do it now. You now we get what we get. Just remember to flay the flay in half. All right, so you've got 90 to 115 feet for grouper.
Yeah.
For red grouper, yeah, 90 feet?
Yeah. They've never really moved in this year into shallower water the way they know. And shallower water is a relative term, but usually they move into that 50 to 65 feet of water this time of year. I'm having virtually no reports of anything close.
A lot of gags in close, though.
Not as much.
Well, there was a little while ago.
There was a few weeks ago.
They left?
Either that or just everyone finally did stop fishing for them and realized they were closed.
let me get out my glove. I'm going to smack them. All right.
I haven't heard of anything literally from Sarasota to Naples as far as any red grouper in close. Huh. It's pretty odd.
You've got what, circle hook law here per reefs?
Yeah.
What does that mean?
Because of the reef fishing that they do have to use circle hooks while using natural bait.
Gotcha. All right.
A lot of people get confused by that, but the Florida law says while harvesting a reef species, you must use an inline circle hook.
One of the reasons...
We don't necessarily agree with it, but you guys get the ticket. We don't, so yeah. We want to at least educate you.
One of the reasons we call it Florida is because, according to the Florida law, if you're going to catch and release, you can use a J-hook or a circle hook or anything you would like. But because of the Florida law has come up with the idea that circle hooks, and this is not my opinion because I don't agree with it. To me, circle hooks were designed like 4,000 plus years ago to catch and kill fish. They were not ever designed for catch and release. But they deemed that these are good catch and release hooks. You got to use a circle hook because that's a good catch and release hook. But if you're going to catch and release, you don't have to use them. But if you're going to catch and kill, you do have to use them.
Yeah, that's a poorly written law.
Okay, so we go back to floor duh on that one. All right.
Our game and fish guys are absolutely amazing. Our officers are absolutely amazing. But the guys writing the laws, not so sharp.
You've been out in the Gulf, RJ? Fishing?
Not recently.
Have you been since they had to do the circle hooks?
Yes.
Because that's actually changed the type of tackle we sell now. When you were out, chances are the rod's 6.5, 7 foot long at least. And when you felt the fish, you get a big sweep up with it. And then you got to hold the rod tip up and start cranking. Well, if you do that with a circle hook, you popped it out of his mouth. You fish with J in circles?
I don't particularly care for the circle hook. I'd rather have a J hook. I think that the J hook, I think, is easier to get out of the fish's mouth.
See?
Exactly.
Just take your little needle nose pliers and you grab the shank of the hook and you give it a push and it comes right out wherever you've got. Even when you got them hooked, you hook a snook in its tongue, that section in the back. It's the circle hook. You got to hold the poor fish there for a while. You got to work the hook around. You literally got to rip it out. You can't get the angle with it because it's a circle hook.
And where do you go? But the eye's hitting the fish. You can't get it out. You end up having to rip it out. It's a horrible thing to do to the fish. Mm-hmm. I think that they're responsible for a lot of broken jaws on fish, a lot of tore up stuff. Yeah, they're fine bringing them up to the boat. It's great. But trying to get them back in the water if you're going to catch and release, horrible catch and release hook. But I feel vindicated. I feel the power. I did not solicit that answer, and that was exactly my point.
That's absolutely correct.
You can't get it out.
I've taken snook off of a J-hook just simply reaching down. The fish is still in the water. I haven't picked him up. I haven't pulled him out. I haven't changed his body in any way. I reach in with the needle nose and do a quick twist, and I've got my hook back. And the fish takes off, you know. And in the best condition he could possibly be in after having a struggle with it.
Absolutely. And I tell you, I am 100% positive this is a fact, and it's good thing about this fact is impossible for anybody to prove I'm wrong. I love facts like that, but I think the fish enjoy the catch and release fishing. I mean, it gets them all excited, gives them something to do. What do? They're just laying down there, bored out of their minds, waiting for something to eat, you know, waiting to get something to eat or have something eat them. It's a pretty boring existence. Now, all of a sudden, they get to jump and fight and they're big thrashing around, and then all of a sudden, you take the hook out, you hold them there next to the boat. And if it was that bad, why would snook stack up under my boat when I release them? I mean, they literally don't go very far at all. They go a few feet. So I think the fish are having fun, just as much fun as we are. I think it's great for both species, human and fish, for to do this catch and release. And people say, well, you know, they're whatever. No, show me where I'm wrong. Show me and prove to me I'm not right. I am right. Fish enjoy catch and release fishing.
Right. So if you're out there and you can get a fish to testify to the opposite of that, let us know. We'll take his deposition. And
because now look at humans. Now this is going to get a little dodgy, but if you're standing outside in another room and there's a couple in the other room, we're not going to designate male and female, but there's a possibility. You can't tell if they're hurting each other or having a real good time. If they're really having a good time, you don't know if they're hurting each other or having a really good time.
Robert and I are both leaning back from our microphones right now, not sure
so
where to go.
How
with this.
Can you tell me a fish would react the same way if he was in distress or having a real good time? So I believe they're having a good time. Come on. Wait, what are you doing here?
Next.
Yeah.
Next. Squirrel.
All right. Let's do something anybody can do, but you do have to have a boat. If you have a boat, you can do this, and it doesn't really matter anything from a 12-foot John boat up, although that's getting a little iffy, but any kind of regular boat, whether it's a big boat or a little boat, what's the one fish that's just inundated along the shorelines? Thousands of them.
Triple tail.
Okay, you got it right. Thank you. I was expecting to be the flag blowing in the breeze there.
Pinfish?
Pinfish. All right. Tell us about triple tail, Robert.
This is probably one of the best years I've ever seen for triple tail in probably 20 years, to be honest. I mean, it's been amazing. I'm getting reports once again from Naples all the way up to Tampa.
Isn't it nice when the old fellas get out naked out and talk amongst the public?
Yeah, I mean, there's been some amazing triple tails. I'm seeing pictures of 12, 15, 18-pound triple tail. Some guys are having 30 and 40 fish days.
Wow.
I mean, and the biggest thing is a lot of guys are staying in close, so there's some people that are getting frustrated because they're getting out too late, or they're finding fish, but those fish have already been hit three or four times with people throwing at them. Those crab traps go all the way out to 18 miles.
Oh, yeah.
So find yourself a crab trap line, and the farther you go, the less likely it's been hit.
Right. You and know? The nice – a couple things to keep in mind. You need polarized sunglasses.
Yes.
You need a hat, Big Bill hat on. Keep the sun off your glasses and stuff.
And keep the sun to your back.
Right. Need to keep the sun at your back. So you're going to get your boat up on plane. You're going to see some crab trap balls out there, any floating debris. As I always say, and I try and remind people, the biggest triple tail I ever caught was under a little snack bag of potato chips, and only his eyes were underneath it. The rest of the fish is sticking out right there. Like, oh, my God, this thing was, you know, 30 inches long. So any floating debris, go along, get your boat up and plane, back the throttle down, so you're still on plane, but going as slow as possible. You're going to find it's probably around 18 miles an hour, somewhere in that range. But then see where you can look on the things. And what are you looking for, Robert? Are you looking for a triple tail?
No,
I said no. We are not looking for the triple tail.
Is this a fishing show or? Never mind.
Speak up, boy. I can't hear you.
You're looking for basically a rag that looks like it's been soaked in oil.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one of the best ways to describe it.
Literally, if you're out there and you expect that you're going to see a triple tail, you're going to go all day and not see them. But all those oily rags that were kind of just snagged on the rope there underneath the crab trap buoys, that was the triple tail you were looking for.
Yeah. And those triple tail will sit vertical, but there's a lot of times where they'll actually sit horizontal right up underneath the buoy or right up against the rope of the buoy.
Those are the weird ones.
Yeah.
When they're literally vertical, straight up and down, and usually they're on their side, and their face is up under the crab trap buoy, and the body's sticking out, and it looks just like an old rag in the water. And I bet you that when I first was learning to do triple tail, I bet you I drove by 50 triple tail before I understood what it was I was actually looking for.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, once you go by them on plane, and you want to stay far enough away from the buoys where your bow splash is not hitting the buoys. They're a pretty dumb fish, but you can't run right over the buoys.
Yeah, 15, 20 feet away, 10 to 20 feet away.
And as you go past them, and you don't need a trolling motor for this. A lot of people think you do, but you really don't. So no matter what size boat you got, you can target these fish. But what you do is go past them a good 100 yards, then slow down.
Turn into the wind.
Turn into the wind, figure out which way your wind and your tide is going, and set up your drift so you're drifting towards the buoy. And I like to make as far of a cast as I can first. That way I have a secondary shot at them. And there's sometimes where you can get right up on top of them, like 2 feet away from the buoy, and get them to eat, but that's not normal. So make sure you have good casting distance. Just a little bit bigger than a regular size shrimp. It doesn't have to be a giant shrimp. I like to use a bobber a little bit more personally because I can actually kind of see.
Now, the only bobbers I use those water-fillable casting bubbles. What do you use?
I actually use those oval floats that I use for tarpon fishing, the little 2.5-inch oval float.
Okay. Now, are you putting a weight below that to give you a little casting distance on it?
Not really. It's more for the visual to see if I've floated in front of the buoy or behind the buoy where
gotcha.
The fish might be facing.
Okay. Yeah. You know, I was talking, I got a guy who makes these circle hook snapper rigs. It's got a circle hooks with the lead already on them.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like the ones Tease does with the J hooks and the little lead on them.
Yeah.
But these are with circle hooks, and he's out of Jacksonville. And I was saying, okay, I want you to come down to the tent sale March 24th. You know, show off your product and do all that. Well, he's got macular degeneration. He said, well, I don't drive. I said, well, I get that. I got Robert at the store, but that's not what you have.
No. No, it's similar, but it's not the same.
Yeah, okay. So a lot of guys bouncing around into walls is all that is.
Yeah.
All right. So, hey, I'm deaf, he's blind, what's the difference? All right, I can't hear. We're like Richard Pryor and
Gene Wilder.
Gene Wilder, you know. Let's see. Getting back into the fishing and away from my distressful talk. I hope I didn't trigger anybody. Okay, canal mouths. What's going on at the mouths of the canals? Now, this would include Englewood, Port Charlotte, Punta Gorda for sure.
Absolutely. Even Pine Island, Cape Coral area.
Right. So you're going to include them this time.
Absolutely. I'll even include Sarasota if you'd like.
All right. He's very inclusive.
Well, I get a lot of reports from all over the place. So, you know, the mouths of the canals have been really starting to stack up with a lot of fish because of the last few weeks of really pretty much dreadful weather has pushed some of those fish up into the canals. So certain canals are seeing some good trout fishing, a lot of snapper, few sheep's head. The snook and the jacks have been cooperating well in the afternoon. This whole next week, it should be good throughout the entire day. But the last 2 weeks, afternoon fishing for catch and release snook has been really good in the canals.
Yeah, you got the later in the day, the better your odds are because the water's still really cold. It's getting hot out, but it'll be a while for the water to come up to that.
Mm-hmm.
So sleep in, have breakfast, you know, find a good local diner and go have some breakfast. Isn't there a place you go to all the time?
I like the Hungry Hound in Englewood.
The Hungry Hound.
Hungry Hound.
We're negotiating right now. We do the talks at Luigi's on the second Tuesday and Wednesday. And we're going to be right here at Common Grounds, WKDW radio station, the room right next door. The next Thursday after that, this month, it's February 27th. The room's half full.
I think more than half full.
I think
now.
It's like two-thirds or three-quarters full. The talk is. It's on February 22nd, or 27th, rather. The two nights at Luigi's are full, and we're still got room left here at the Common Grounds WKDW Studios. Then we're negotiating right now for the Strike Zone, I think it is, in Englewood. It's a big sports bar to get room there. So the next week we'll be in Englewood at the, I think it's the Strike Zone.
I think it is the Strike, or the, no, it's the End Zone.
End Zone,
it's the
yeah.
End Zone, yeah. End Zone's been there forever. They moved across the street from a smaller place to a bigger place last year.
It's an amazing place.
Yeah, it's a big place. It'll be, and the food there is pretty good for a sports bar.
Yeah, it's sports bar food, but we're negotiating with them to have the fishing club at the End Zone. And that's right, it is the End Zone. I checked the place out. I went over there and then went back. I've called the manager, and we got to go out and kind of finalize what's going to go on. But we're hoping to get that, and that way we'll have the meetings at Luigi's, here at Common Grounds, and out there at the End Zone. So you'll be able to catch us, Robert and I, in all these different places. And we always have a cast of characters with us. We bring in two or three other captains, and it is a free-for-all. The wife at Luigi's, we do it there because they call it dinner and a show. And that's what we're going to do over at the End Zone, is dinner and a show. And we're going to work out some stuff here. Maybe we can get somebody to cater the night here at Common Grounds, because it's nice to have a meal and relax and do all that and hear about fishing. All right. Let's see. In the ICW, what's going on in the ICW right now?
That's where your better trout fishing has been more consistently, and actually most of your fishing in general as far as consistent and varieties.
ICW. Intercoastal Waterway. So yep.
Intercoastal, intracoastal, whichever one you want to put it. They both are the same.
All right.
But, well, some people get confused by it.
All right.
It's basically that whole thing behind the barrier islands.
Right. The waterway that goes from Venice all the way down to Fort Myers. Let's see. In the ICW, you got a lot of trout. We're hoping several other fish show up. There's some ladyfish. There's bluefish working the area right now. We're looking forward to some pompano coming in, and hopefully maybe a little Spanish mackerel here in the next few weeks to a month. But they should be back pretty soon. Bonnethead sharks. We are hearing reports of them everywhere.
Yeah.
And they're so much fun.
Did Morris tell you what he saw yesterday or
no.
the day before yesterday? He saw an aggregate of them, like, actually, like, actively looked like they were breeding.
Okay.
Like 200 or 300.
Wow.
In a school off a devilfish.
Wow.
He said he sat there for an hour just watching, and he said they would come, they would chase each other, they would actually start to grab at each other. It sounds like they were actually breeding.
Yeah,
I called Greg Balakas to ask him, you know, our local FWC marine biologist. I called him, and he's never seen that. He's heard of smaller aggregates of like 20, 30 fish, but not a couple hundred.
And it's a wonderful catch and release fish. They pull hard. They'll bust the surface for you. They're a lot of fun. Very safe to handle a bonnet shark. Follow a couple simple rules. I hold the leader in my right hand, or if you're left-handed, in your left hand. I kind of pick the fish up by the leader. Now, they hit very readily under a float. And so when I'm on the flats of the east side over at Cape Hayes, there's so many around Cape Hayes devilfish right now, that's probably where I'd be going. And I put a shrimp under a bobber, and I use the bobbers that have the wire going through them. And that way I tie my line to the top of the wire, put my leader off the bottom, two-aught hook with a shrimp on it, usually great for catching bonnets. But when I get them up next to the boat, I can actually grab that float and use it as a handle to control the shark. I pick up with my good hand to see how much it weighs. If I can easily handle it with my good hand, pick it up a little further, hold it up, and then grab the dorsal fin with my thumb and index finger of my left hand, kind of get them steady, and then reach up and grab them by the back of the head with my left hand. Now, I've already tested the weight with my right hand. I'm holding the leader, not grabbing the shark, just holding the leader. And if I feel I can safely handle him, I'll pick him up a little bit, grab him behind the head, and usually I start with the dorsal fin and then move my hand directly up. So my thumb is by the gill on one side, my middle finger's by the gill on the other side. And sharks are very, very smooth head to tail, but from tail to head, they're very, very rough, like a wood rasp. So they don't slide down in your hand. Once you have him behind the head, you've got control of that shark. He's not going to go away. You're not going to have any problems. Take your pliers out. Take the hook out. And, you know, admire him a little bit, because you're literally holding a species of hammerhead shark. We call them bonnets. You want to be a little more rough and tough, call them shovel nose. But they're a form of hammerhead. And you get to hold them. Look under the hammer, and you'll see different kind of color variations, almost like, I don't know, daisy petals, because they start off a little smaller and get rounded up. It's the sensors that they smell and feel with on the bottom of that hammer. You can literally see them. It's awesome. So check them out and then put them back in the water, release them. make sure you let go of the head is the last thing you let go of. I see people, they'll hold the head and then have their other hand holding the tail. Let go at the head to put him through there. That shark can whip right around and bite you. He can bite his own tail. So always let go of the tail first and then the head. And they're so safe, easy to handle. It's actually a very docile shark, but he still has teeth. He still can bite you.
Yeah. Awesome. You still want to be careful.
I can tell you, people like eating them. I don't like the flavor of a bonnet shark. They eat too much shrimp, and their whole diet's about shrimp and stuff like that.
Shrimp and crabs, primarily.
And to me, they've got that over-iodine taste to them. I think they're a little bitter. I prefer a black tip. I like the black tips, Atlantic sharp nose, the ones like that, that eat more fish and less of the crustaceans. So to me, that's, you know, they're very, very edible, and some people like them, but it's literally, do you like the flavor of peanut butter? Do you like the flavor of strawberry? Some people can't stand strawberry. And to me, strawberry is wonderful. Me, I don't like flavor of bonnet sharks. I like the flavor of the other ones. But I do like catch-and-release fishing. So, where are we at? Bonnet heads at Cape Hayes and all that. So, fitting with this as we are right now, you are listening to WKDW Radio, 97.5 FM, Real Community Radio. And this is a Real Community Radio, which means if you go to kdwradio.com and click the Donate Now button, donate something for Robert. I know you don't want to keep me on there, but everybody loves Robert. I know you want to keep him on. We take none of the money. Everything goes to the station to help all the good stuff they do because this is a great radio station. Help keep them on the air. Click the Donate Now button or click the Listen Now button. You can listen to us to anywhere in the world. Not that you'd want to, but, you know, hey, you're here now, so you're kind of stuck with it. So getting on to the next thing, WKDW Radio 97.5 out of Northport, Florida. All right. Soft plastics right now and kind of jigs in general are really catching a lot of fish.
Yeah. Yeah, they've been working well. I mean, wintertime lures usually work fairly well, but this year definitely soft plastics and jigs have been really dominating everything, even in a lot of instances better than the shrimp.
And I'm hearing that more and more. I'd have to say the number one would be the DOA Cal Shads. Little paddle tail shads. Yep. Number one, I mean, they're less than $4 and you get a dozen in the thing. So they're inexpensive. Use almost any jig head with them. I do like, when I throw them, I'm using the DOA quarter ounce jig head because it's a very short shank. So the hook is a little more forward on it. In some of the jig heads, the hook sits back so far that right. I want the hook a little further forward. So I like the DOA jig, or I use a Rockport Rattler with the 1/0 hook. You can use a 2/0, and I put that in there. Now, when I go to put the Rockport in, we sell a fingernail clipper at the store. It's like $1 or $2. And you're not buying it for the fingernail clipper. People think they're line cutters. It's when you open the handle up, you'll see a little nail file in there. That little nail file is the perfect starter hole for small, soft plastic baits when you need to put a large jig head in. Like Rockport Rattler has that big rattle right there. So in order to get it into the jig body, I take the file from that nail clipper, put it in the end, and make a starter hole with it. I put it in, run it back and forth a couple times, pull it out. Then when I go to put the jig head in, it's hard to see where that hole is in the soft plastic. So I put my hook down kind of like at a bevel, and I drag it with the point trailing, and all of a sudden it'll pop right in that little slit. I can put it in, and I never split the plastic apart trying to put large jig heads or Rockport Rattlers in those small baits.
That works.
And it's that little file that makes it all. But here's a question. What makes them jigs? Why is a jig different than just a lure?
Because you're actually working it and jigging it straight up and down.
So the jigging action of the rod designates the name of the lure.
Correct.
We're like a twitch bait.
Yep.
I mean, I literally just thought of that, but that a twitch bait is something you've got to twitch the rod to work. Yep. A jig, you would actually have to lift the rod tip up and down. Primarily in a from, let's say, you're holding it out at 9 o'clock, 90 degrees out, going up to about 11, coming back down, and you can vary how much of that goes up and down.
Right.
But most of us do a little bit of lift. Say we're starting at 9, and then we go to about 10:30, back to 10, up to 11, and back to 9.
Yeah, changing it a little bit.
It's kind of a little double pull, double haul type retrieve. You're reeling slowly, lift on the rod, set it back down. Now, the lift actually pops the jig up, gives it a upward motion as well as a forward motion. As it's going up, then, and you get that second one, so you get that kind of dart up, and then it, half a pause, and then dart up again. As you lower your rod tip, you're creating slack on that line. That allows the jig to fall back down.
Correct.
And so it's making it go in an up and down vertical action. But there's a lot of different types of jigs out there. You've got, what do they call the offshore ones? They use grouper fishing.
Vertical jigs or speed jigs, even diamond jigs.
Right. And now the vertical jigs or speed jigs, there, and I think there's another name, and I can't remember. It's hell to get old, heck to get old. What it is, it looks more to me like a lead spoon. It's just a, it's long. They
it's
usually
a painted looking
from,
spoon that looks like a fish, but it's made out of lead.
Yeah, and it's from 4 inches to 6 or 8 inches long.
Yeah,
and it's all metal inside with a paint job. And now diamond jigs, when they first started out, literally had a diamond shape to them. They come flat and they come diamond edge and square and all that. But you tied the hook to the top, or the line to the top, and the hook was on the bottom.
Correct.
And now that changed a little while ago, didn't it?
Yeah, with the butterfly jigs or...
Butterfly jigs. See, I knew there was one. I couldn't get to it.
It was coming. they actually hooked the hooks up on the top by the eyelet on some of them.
With a little tiny leader, a couple inches long.
Yeah.
And then the hook is actually hanging about halfway down on the bait?
Yeah, it's called an assist hook. It's the hook is basically a snelled hook that's literally a 2-inch snelled hook that goes onto that eyelet. And sometimes there's two, and some guys will even put four on because they'll actually do two on the top and two on the bottom to catch some of those other fish that strike them funky.
Now, jigs can have an amazing variety of tails, right?
Yeah.
So the butterfly jigs don't have any tails on them at all. It's simply a piece of lead, and I think it's getting its name as a jig because you're lifting it up, dropping your rod tip, lift your tip, drop your rod tip, and it's making it bounce up and down, and I think it's the jigging action of the rod that causes that to be a jig.
Well, the other part of it, too, though, is while they're jigging it up and down, when they're lowering their rod, that hesitation there actually starts to want to drop a little bit, and it actually spirals a little bit like a corkscrew.
And some of them will fall over and actually flop back. Some of them will lay on their sides and wobble down.
Yep.
You look at the shape of a butterfly jig and picture it going up in the air. And then as it paused, picture in your mind how you think that would fall back towards the bottom. If it's heavy at the top, it's going to flip over. The head's going to come down first. If it's kind of the same thickness all the way through, maybe it'll wobble down. But if it's very thin at the top, very heavy at the bottom, some of those dart, but dart off sideways.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. I think it's the erraticness of them that makes them so productive. But and now, I can't believe how well they work with as fast as everyone retrieves them.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah.
You know, the other thing you're using a lot in the Gulf is bucktails.
Bucktails, definitely. That's actually one of my more favorite artificial lures for out in the Gulf.
Now, anybody out there want to guess how bucktail lures got their name? Well, Archie's looking at me like, really, don't do it again, Frank?
No. We're leaning back from our microphones again, folks.
Leaning back from the microphone, and he's got his finger on the sensor switch, just in case.
Now, this one's actually really easy. What do they call a male deer?
A buck.
A buck.
Now, why do they call it a buck?
Because it's worth more than 25 cents.
That's because they used to pay a dollar for the pelts back in the times.
There we go.
There you go.
Wow, right. Great piece of trivia.
Great piece. I didn't know that because the pelts were worth a dollar.
Yep.
So it was a buck.
Yep.
All right. Bucktails, literally are made, deer hunters and stuff, jig companies buy deer tails. And they cut the hair off of the tails, and that's what's tied onto the lead head. A jig, in its normal historical terms, has a round or somewhat, you know, round-shaped head of some description around, and then a hook sticking out of the back. And then you put different types of skirts and everything on it. It could be sliced rubber, could be bucktail, could be
Mylar,
soft plastic. I don't know. There are hard body jigs, I think. I mean, hard plastic jigs? Maybe not. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
We've seen so many gadgets over the years, yeah, to be honest with you. It wouldn't surprise me.
But the original one, the most common one, was a bucktail. And the reason the bucktail is still better than the Mylar and the nylon, because you can get nylon tails and all that, but bucktail has an amazing thing it does that no other material in the world will do. When you tie the deer hair on there and you lift your rod tip up, sending that jig upward towards the surface, as you release the pressure, when it's on its way up, the hair on that squeezes together, and as soon as you pause, it expands in a big puff. I mean, it just gets big, and then it narrows as it goes to the bottom, then hits the bottom, and it puffs out big again. And it, I think it kind of maybe does like a squid darting through the water or something. I don't really know what it would look like.
Yeah, I mean, I know what it looks like, but I don't know what it mimics of anything whatsoever, but I know, but it works.
It's that big, it collapses down and becomes very, very small, and then the instant it pauses, that hair just releases and creates a something that's five times as big and then goes back to a very small tube shape again. It's an amazing substance what that hair will do, and that's why it works so well with the fish, because it gives that erratic, you know, okay, darting and poof, I'm stopping, and aggression, and it's amazing stuff. Actual deer hair on jigs. And I'm sure they did it because I bet their wife got tired of them coming up behind her with the scissors and tying her hair on, because I don't think human hair would have that same characteristic. But I don't know who was the first one to ever think, okay, well, if I tied some hair to this hook, make it look better, you know. So anyway, jigs, a lot of different types, you know, and Robert, do you really think there's a difference between freshwater and saltwater jigs?
Not really. I really don't. I mean, other than some of your freshwater jigs are a thin wire hook.
So the hook would be the determining
the
factor.
The strength of it, yeah.
Okay. So you figure, but I mean, I believe bucktail jigs started in freshwater and then found their way into saltwater.
Yeah, they're definitely one of those crossover baits where all the manufacturers have kind of made them universal.
I mean, the number one snook jig I've ever seen, number one snook jig, and it's a bucktail, but it has a green feather in it. We call it the Green Ghost, and it's got a laughing head on it, or smiling head, laughing jig head.
What's another name for them? Hot lips?
Hot lips, yeah. It's white and it's got red lips on it, like they painted it with lipstick. White bucktail with a dark green feather in it. That's one of the all-time best snook jigs ever done. The other one is the red tail hawk. I don't know if I have one here on the table or not. But the red tail hawk is usually a red and white head, more pencil-shaped in description of how the jig head is molded, not like a head with lips like the Green Ghost is, but more pencil, red and white head, and then you have white either nylon or bucktail off the back of it, and then they take a little bit of red nylon thread that's three times the length of the bucktail, the white bucktail. Creates a streamer effect out the back. Almost looks like it's bleeding and it's carrying that with them. And that, those hawk jigs, the red tail hawks, they're probably my second snook lure. Now, on the east coast of Florida, it's number one.
Right.
And it outsells the Green Ghost, because when I learned to sell stuff for snook, I'm like, what do I sell if somebody wants something for a snook? Green Ghost, red and white bomber.
Right.
That,
and pretty much the best order.
34 years later, it still works. Redtail Hawks were still there. They still work. But those are some of my favorite ones. But freshwater to saltwater. Now, let's take Voodoo, Savage, DOA, Storm. Or let's just start with the Voodoo and the Savage and the DOA, because they're lead-weighted. They come pre-rigged with a hook. And now the Voodoo has, these are shrimp jigs. The Voodoo has the weight up in the front. It's kind of a stand-up jig, so it's made to jump up, go down, hit the bottom hard. Now, I included, without even thinking about it, the Voodoo shrimp, the Savage shrimp, and the DOA. Is the DOA shrimp a jig? It does not fall head first.
No, it doesn't, but you still kind of work it like a jig. Even though it's falling vertical.
But even the Savage shrimp is using a weedless worm hook with a weight on the bottom, providing a much flatter fall. Now, the Storm shrimp has a weedless worm hook with it that you rig it with. Now, you can get them with the jig heads, but I stock the ones that have the weedless worm hook. The DOA, the Storm, and even live target shrimp, all of them, right, they're technically not jigs.
No, technically, because they are actually going down more horizontal rather than vertical when they fall.
Right. So if you've got a jerk bait, let's say you're a bass fisherman, and if you've got a jerk bait or a fluke, whatever they call them, those long minnow-looking things with the tails on
fluke.
Them, and you rig it with a weedless worm hook with no weight on it, that's definitely not a jig. I mean, that's a twitch bait.
Yep.
All right. Now, if you put a Carolina rig on it where the weight's out in front of it and the bait's trailing back, still not a jig. And even with a Texas rig where you have a sliding worm hook or a sliding worm weight, that might come close. But if you use a Florida rig where you fix a bullet weight right to the front of it, so that weight is attached to the bait, can't move away from it, that would turn that fluke or jerk bait into a jig.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Because you're going to work it by twitching your rod tip up, letting it fall, lifting rod tip up, letting it fall, and it's going to go up and drop nose first.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd have to agree with that. You know, that's the jigging motion would be the factor in it with how it's worked.
You know, it's just kind of funny because we were looking on the way up here going, what actually makes a jig? Now, look at the silly jig that everybody uses, the pompano jig. It's actually a banana jig. They call them silly or crazy jigs or whatever just because of the strange guy who brought them back as a actual lure again. But those silly jigs, crazy jigs, that's just a long piece of lead molded to the hook and with a paint job on it.
To me, it looks like a lead spoon.
Lead spoon would be more of the thing, yeah. It could be a lead spoon, but we use it kind of like a jig. So, yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
That could either be a lead spoon or a jig.
Yeah. And
so,
they're ridiculously amazing. But right. I find working them as in a jigging motion for the intended targeted species such as pompano and whiting and flounder, that jigging motion is a lot more productive versus if you were to retrieve it more like an actual lure where you're keeping it up in the water column, twitching it along like you would a spoon.
Gotcha. Now, what's the difference between a regular bucktail like a spro or a pot gut and a pompano jig?
The longer fur coming off behind the hook.
Right. A regular bucktail jig, you've got the lead head, you've got the hook coming out the back of it, then they tie the feathers on it. And it's usually about twice as long as from the head to the hook. Then you have that much again behind it. Pompano, and one of the reasons the silly jigs work is because they don't have anything trailing behind it. Pompano tend to come from behind a jig to bite on it. And if all that hair is coming out or soft plastic or plastic skirts or whatever, they're going to bite that and never get to the hook. A regular pompano jig is a small ball head. It's got a very short nylon tail on it, not the bucktail, but the nylon, although bucktail does work. And then if it's cut off within about an eighth of an inch of the farthest back bend of the point. So when the fish comes up on it, they're literally grabbing the hook, not just the feathers or bucktails.
Right.
So that would be the difference. You could take any lure, any jig you have, it doesn't matter what it is, any kind of bucktail, take a pair of scissors and trim the hair so it's about an eighth of an inch behind the bend. So if you're looking at it sideways, you see the jig head, the hook comes back, and then it curves up, and then the point starts going forward. Right at the farthest point of that curve, you want to trim the hair off of that. Now you have a pompano jig.
Yeah, pretty
because,
much.
Because, you know, they work. That's the way it is. I got one I got to throw in here. The Rage Tail Crawdad from Strike King. This thing is going crazy on the flats, boys and girls. You swim it and jig it in a swimming motion, lifting up while you're steady, reeling, dropping your rod tip, lifting it up. And it acts like that old twin tail, curl tail grub. There's a lot of curl tail grubs out there, and everybody, you know, used a lot of curl tails on trout. But finding any colors in the twin tail was tough. So I was showing the guys that I thought these crawdads would work, and it does. They catch a ton of trout with that, used as like a curl tail grub. But I didn't expect the redfish to like them so much. What do you think it is about that crawdad that the redfish are beating the tar out of them?
I think it's mimicking a crab sticking its claws up in the air that's being threatened.
Yeah, blue crab, when they get threatened, they drop their butt down, they stick their claws up, they get real mean, like, I'm going to scare you away, and then
yeah,
the fish
eats
them.
Run and hide, that's their last defense, is their claws. Running is their first defense.
Right.
Standing and fighting is their second defense, and they always stick those claws up in the air to fight something. And yes, this is a freshwater bait, but it is absolutely amazing, and once again, just like these bucktails and many other lures, it proves that freshwater and saltwater lures can cross over very easily for multiple species of fish.
I would have, you know, I had a hunch that it would work on the trout, and it did. And then Carl started doing it on the redfish, and it was absolutely amazing how many redfish he's caught on these crawdads and how many trout are in there. Okay, one quick thing. This storm swim bait, jig or crankbait?
Yes, depending on how you want to work it. You can do both with it. That's the nice thing about some of the swim baits is the jig head is molded at the end of it.
This is a wild-eyed swim shad. It's the top seller, you know, pre-bait. They're like $1.10 a piece. They come in three. It's a little shad, the paddle tail, got eye on it, hook, but I kind of always thought they were jigs, but I'm asking you the question now.
I would say that technically that's what they were designed to be, as a jig, but because of that tail action that they've got, you can swim them.
You can swim it like a crankbait.
Some guys even troll them. I mean, guys have been using those on umbrella rigs for bass fishing for the last 10 years.
And they're great for trolling in the canals because a lot of people are catching fish trolling. It's amazing. Got a storm twitch stick on one side or a bomber 14 on the other on there. On the other side, they're using curl tail grubs or these paddle tail shads, and you've got the best of both worlds. You got the hard bait on one side, you got the soft bait on the other side, catching a lot of snook, jacks, trout, ladyfish, you name it. The trolling is going crazy in the canal systems, even on the ICW back on the flats. Had a guy in talking about a side planer they use for walleye. He brought it down with him. His boat's too big. He can't get up in the shallow water. He's got like a 28-foot boat with twins on it. So he put the side planer out, and he's trolling that in 3 feet of water, keeping his boat out in 6 feet of water.
Yeah, and catching a lot of trout. A
lot of fish with it. It's absolutely, you know, you just got to be a little imaginative. In the Gulf of Mexico, if you have a hook, a jig, and it has a J-hook on it, we do sell circle hook jig heads, but they're a pain. How do you get the bait on? I mean, it's just, they're not good. But the J hooks, if you can't put squid on there, you cannot put shrimp on there. You are not allowed to put any natural bait on there. Not live, not dead, in the Gulf of Mexico for grouper or snapper. So how
not
do you get around it?
Not anywhere in the harbor.
Not anywhere in the harbor either.
Not any reefs.
So, because it's got a J-hook, you're not allowed to put bait on it.
Correct.
But you can put fish bites or gulp on it.
Yes.
Now, the fish bites, to me, I like the bag of worms, they call it. It's a bloodworm alternative. I cut off about a 3-inch piece of it. I put the hook through it a couple times, use it as a trailer off the back. I don't use the whole thing. It's a little on the pricey side. So I cut little sections, 2-3 inches long. Gives the smell, the flavor, a little added appearance to it. And it's just awesome with that. March 24th is the tent sale this year, guys. We got everybody coming. March 24th, it's going to be awesome. I mean,
hopefully we'll be doing some broadcasting from there.
Yeah, you're going to do live broadcasts.
That's the plan. Yep, yep.
And
I'm going to be coming with my pockets full of dollar bills. There's going to be great stuff
dancing.
To buy.
Yeah. Robert says I'm in.
You're not dancing? Well,
boy,
you set yourself
my gosh.
Up for that one.
Oh man, I walked into that one like the glass sliding door.
I don't know. This is too many visuals for me. Fish and Frank here. We're with Fish and Frank's. We have a store in Port Shaw. We have one in North Fort Myers. We're going to be giving talks very soon. We do them at Luigi's, and we're going to be here at WKDW in Common Grounds. We're going to be out in Englewood. We've still got to finish the negotiation on that, but hopefully the end zone is going to allow us to do them out there. Robert's in the chair across from me. Say goodbye, Robert.
Goodbye, Robert.
All right. RJ, you had enough for the day?
I've had enough for today.
All right. Fish and Frank saying so long, guys. We'll catch you next week. Bye.
The wife, she thinks I'm working. And the boss, she thinks I'm sick. It's a perfect day for fishing, drinking beer, and telling lies.